a Native American, I am grateful for the music that has arisen out of the history of the African slaves that were brought to that country against their will. This song in particular speaks of their having been ripped from the arms of their mothers, in many cases, taken from their motherland, denied their mother tongue, denied their mother faith and religion, denied even the familiar stars in the heavens. Nothing was familiar when they landed on the shores of the United States as slaves. And yet, these courageous peoples were able to take the language of their masters, the religion of their masters, and the promise of redemption held out by their master's faith in Christianity, and to use that to sing to one another, to express their sorrow and their loss, and through their music, to remind us of our collective humanity. I am grateful for all the traditions of the African American spirituals, and this song in particular speaks to me.
Thank you, Sue. So we settle into our seats. I invite you to close your eyes if you wish to do that. Take a deep breath. Notice the body that is your home. Amid all the noise in our lives, we take this moment to sit in silence, to give thanks for another day, and to give thanks for all of those in our lives who have brought us warmth and love. To give thanks for this gift of life. Let us open ourselves here and now to the process of becoming more whole, of living more fully, of giving and forgiving more freely, of understanding more completely the meaning of our lives here on earth.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long way from home. A long, long way from home. A long way from home. A long, long way from home. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. A long way from home. A long, long way from home. A long way from home. A long, long way from my home.
There are some songs, some expressions that need space around them, and that's one of them. Thank you, Sue. Sometimes we all feel like motherless children, alone in the world, perhaps scared, lonely, having lost that which is important, that unconditional love of a mother or a father, a friend, a pet. Loss is difficult to be with. Loss is hard to live with. Loss hurts. But it's part of our human condition. It is fundamentally part of being human. Impossible to avoid. And although it touches each one of us, we often find it very hard to speak about, hard to share with other people, hard to face. I ask that we face it this morning together, a little bit. As many of you know, I recently lost my father in January. He died after a lengthy illness, natural causes of old age. It was a good death. It was a good and welcome death for those that loved him as well. And I want you not to worry about me. I'm fine, surrounded by family and friends and supported at this time. And my mom is doing well. And I especially thank you for your messages of sympathy. It meant a lot to receive them, those expressions of care and understanding from this community of friends, of congregants. Sharing together at a time of loss is one of those natural things that we do. And this community is good at doing that, good at reaching out and letting people know that they matter and that there are people around for them, for us, for me. And over the past couple of months, you know, I've experienced how important it was for me to receive those words of comfort and support. The cards that came through the mail, the flowers, they created a zone in my living room that reminded me that There were people that cared. On the whole, we don't like to stay with those feelings of loss. They are at the least uncomfortable, if not painful, and on the whole, we don't like to put ourselves in positions of feeling pain or hurt or emptiness or aloneness. I invite you now to look at the image that's on the front of the Order of Service. What you'll see there is an empty chair surrounded by water. Now, the water is not deep, but the shore is very far away. You'll notice the sky is heavy with clouds, which are darker right overhead, and in the distance there is more light, or the hope of light breaking. Atmospherically, this picture speaks to me of the interior experience of loss. Gray, empty, sad, spacious, changeable, gentle, hopeful. Our responses to loss change as the sky changes, as the weather moves. Our experience changes like the changes of the ocean. Loss has an ebb and flow to it, like the tides. If we sat in that empty chair, we'd feel that water coming in on the tide. And we'd feel the change as the tide receded. We'd notice its absence. And then some part of us might even want the water back again for its comfort. Or perhaps wish that we might not have it back and remain dry. But we know that loss comes and goes and ebbs and flows. And although there is an ebb and flow to loss, there is no right way of experiencing. And even though it is something that we need to do, it's hard to sit in that chair. Even though it's tiring to do so, and even though there may be a million things to accomplish, by sitting with that experience of loss, we give our soul and our hearts time to acknowledge the loss and adjust to the loss. Now, I noticed that I've been using the word soul a lot this year in my sermons, and I think it's appropriate if I attempt to explain what I mean and think when I use the word soul and why it's so important to me. Soul to me is that part of us that is made from the earth and connected to earthly life. This earthly life, filled with its joy and its pain, with its pleasure and its loss. Is how we experience life through our senses, our bodies, our hearts. The song that Sue sang earlier is a song of soul. A song that comes out of real experience. A song that touches our soul's knowing. Soul is essential. Soul is not afraid of the pain or the darkness, or of deep love. Soul understands the attachment to things. And so soul also understands the loss of things. In his book, Love of the World, Robert Sardello says that being with our grief and our sense of loss is to be with our soul. And to be with our soul means to not be in our ego, which is the part of us that has read up on the process of loss and therefore has created a plan for us on how we're going to experience it. It's got information about the stages and the levels, and therefore we can judge how well we are doing by comparing what we have read about and planned about how we are going to do loss. That's the ego piece. Soul, on the other hand, has no plan, because soul is just there, in the present, experiencing the present, aware, engaged. Now, I couldn't tell you what soul looks like or how much it weighs. I can tell you that if I don't pay attention to my soul, I get ungrounded, stressed, off-center, tense, and I lose my connection to earth. I lose connection with the depth of human experience. Soul takes me down and in. Spirit takes me up and out. Spirit's all about light and forward motion. Soul is all about shadows and standing still and being here and now. And for me, necessary. When we sit in our loss and feel that ebb and flow of our response to the object of our loss, we are awakening or illuminating our soul. And there we find gifts. When we experience loss and give our souls time to respond, we see that loss teaches us about what is essential. Essential. That which is indispensable, vital, crucial to our lives. I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, when you get sick, you become acutely conscious of how essential health is. When we lose a pet or a friend, we become aware of how essential relationship is, the importance of being loved and the opportunity to love. When we lose a job, we become acutely aware of the value of money and perhaps the value of the meaning of work and the value of our contribution to society and the value of being the provider for others. When we experience a new geography, we may realize how important another geography is to us. When I'm on the prairies, I miss the smell of ocean and how I need moisture in my life. And when I'm on the coast, I long for the vastness of the prairie horizon and the powerful spiritual effect that that landscape has on me. And if you've ever been in a country where the air is thick with smoke and the water polluted with chemicals, you are awakened to the reality of the essentialness of water, clean water, and clean air. As we age, we sometimes look on our young people and judge them as not valuing what they have. I must confess, I fall into this with my daughter from time to time. This is because we have had the experience of loss, and through our experience, we have come to understand what is essential in our lives. Sometimes those lessons were challenging, painful, yet we recognize that our losses have formed us and the choices that we've made and honed our appreciation for what we have. My father lived through the Great Depression in Saskatchewan as a young boy. I'm assuming everybody knows what I mean when I say the Great Depression. I imagine there was very little to eat in those days. Very little water. The crops didn't grow. The topsoil was blown away. Life was very hard, and there was an awful lot of loss in it. Essentials, like food and water. And I saw the effect that this had on him throughout his life. He valued food greatly. And never took for granted that it would be there the next day. He always presided over the family dinner serving out each portion to each member of the family. And he made sure that at the end of the meal, there was always something left that would be covered up and put in the fridge so that there would always be food the next day. His experience of loss, it defined his behavior. Loss brings with it the gift of seeing what is essential in our lives. Now you may say that there is nothing good or positive or redemptive about loss. And that is a fair response. Your experience of loss may have been or may be simply too big or too painful to feel that there is any goodness that can be derived from the suffering. And if this is your experience, I offer you my gentlest and most compassionate compassion for your suffering. There are indeed losses that are too big. Losses that rock our worlds, that tear the fabric of what we know. Losses that we feel that we may not be strong enough to face, never mind sit with. I have a dear friend who lost her mother to cancer when she was only 15 years old. As you can imagine, the loss of a mother or a parent at any age is a great loss, but even more so when you are not yet grown yourself. And this loss was too great for my friend. She tells me she just wasn't able to feel it or face it. It wasn't until she was in her 30s that she was able to begin to sit with that loss, feel it, and integrate it into her body and soul. Some losses are indeed great, and some take a very long time to sit with and process. This week is the beginning of the Christian Holy Week, and boy, is that a big story of loss. As the story is told, on this day, Jesus begins the week entering the city of Jerusalem as the king, or I should say the prince of peace, triumphant, celebrated. And by the end of the week, by Easter Friday, he has lost everything. Humiliated, degraded, defiled, nailed to a cross. For Christians, this week is a week of acknowledging huge loss. And one of the reasons that I chose to talk about loss on this particular Sunday. I think that we need these stories of loss, world stories, community stories, such as this story of Jesus, so that we can share together as a community openly our experiences through ritual and story together. I think we need these stories because we need opportunities to acknowledge that we have pain and suffering in our lives and acknowledge that we experience loss. My friend who lost her mother, who could not sit with her loss, well, at the risk of creating an untrue story for her, let me surmise that I do know, and that I do know that the Christian story meant a lot to her. Let me surmise that at a conscious or even an unconscious level, that she was able, through the annual telling of the story of Jesus' suffering, to experience her loss, her own suffering, and that it was helpful and healing. And so whether or not this is a story that helps you, I'm sure that you can see and appreciate how it may help others to feel safe in their communities, to feel their personal pain and suffering and loss. In my description of today's service that was written up in our newsletter, I said I was going to explore the Buddhist understanding of loss and the concept of non-attachment. And in my research, I discovered that what I thought was attachment and non-attachment was wrong. So I'm going to share with you just very briefly what I learned. So the story of Buddha is that he sat under the Bodhi tree and gained enlightenment. He came to see things as they truly were, reality. And what he saw was that humans suffer. He saw that for humans, suffering is caused by the attachment to thoughts and feelings and the things of this world. This is what I knew about Buddhism, to which I concluded that if we love someone, we are attaching to them, and therefore when they die, we suffer because our love is attached. I concluded from this that if I was Buddhist, I couldn't really love anything. And I thought, I don't like that. Love is what is essential to me. Love is the power that holds everything together for me. And if I can't love, well, I don't want to be part of this world. And even though there's a great deal about Buddhism that I am attracted to and have learned from, I concluded that I couldn't accept this non-attachment part. I'm telling you all this because I think a lot of people in the West, and including me, misunderstand this piece of Buddhism. And here's what I've learned. Non-attachment is about not being attached to the way things are going to work out. It's about not being attached to our idea of the way things should be or should go. It's about not clinging to an end result. What Buddha wanted was for everyone to be present to themselves in the world, not live in future outcomes. Buddha wanted people to be deeply engaged, deeply aware, deeply real and intimate in the present, in this world. Fixed or rigid ideas destroy that realness, that intimacy, that love. Now, according to Michael Stone, a Buddhist teacher, we need to drop into the way things really are. See what is really there by being fully present, seeing what is happening socially, environmentally, politically, every way that humans are being in the world. And then open up to that present moment and engage with it. If we are protecting ourselves by rigid ideas, fixed ideas about the way things should be, that's when we suffer. Michael Stone would say that loss is a reality of this world, and that can be an opportunity to experiencing the world in ourselves in a new way. Well, for example, if I had held on to the idea that my father was not going to die, then you see, I would be suffering terribly. Because he, like all of us, will die. If my idea was rigid and unchangeable, then my suffering would last as long as I held on to that idea. My dear friend who lost her mother at 15 may have not been able to face her loss because of that a fixed idea, a thought, understandable as much as it is. Perhaps her thought that she got fixated on was, mothers are not supposed to die before their children are grown. I don't know. Perhaps. Or it could be a thought that simply said to, in her own brain, said, this is unfair. Well, one day, my friend was able to soften her grasp on whatever that thought was. And when she did, she was then able to begin the next part of her healing. Let me conclude by saying that loss is also a doorway into experiencing the world in a new way, a change in the fabric of existence, as if light shines through the new openings in our life, like in the picture on the front of the order of service, that light that's just about to break through the clouds. When we lose something or someone or a part of ourselves, perhaps even just an idea of ourselves, we are losing a thing. And when that thing is gone, its absence reveals something new. Eeyore lost a tail and discovered friendship. My father, I lost him, but I discovered his qualities that live on in me. I like the image of our lives as a great fabric. Our thoughts and experiences are the fibers in the cloth. And when we lose someone or something, it is as if some of those threads are pulled out of the fabric. And this change potentially allows a new relationship between the other strands in the fabric, between the thoughts that we have, between the experiences we have, between the relationships that we have. Loss changes what has been into something new. This is why we need time after loss. We need time to adjust to the change in the fabric of our lives. How we adjust, that's unique to all of us. Some of us need time to notice the change. Some of us need time to feel it. Some of us need time to create new stories about ourselves and the world that we live in. I suggest that our souls need adjustment time. Time to adjust to new insight and new love, new connections. So whether you take it from a Buddhist perspective or a Christian perspective or a humanist perspective, from all of these points, the story has a unifying piece, and that is that there is hope and renewal in all our stories and experiences of loss. So be it.